Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And let me be the first to say good morning to you from 93.7 The Fan. This is The Fan Early Morning Show. We're live and local here at 5 a.m. from our Green Tree Studios. I'm Matt Cole here with you till 5:40. It's the start of a new day, and it's brought to you by Greenbrier Treatment Center. It's a Wednesday, and we are inching closer and closer to the season opener between the Steelers and the Patriots on Sunday night on NBC. And Mike Tomlin took to the podium yesterday. He was great. We'll get into that later on in the show. The Pirates did pirate things last night. We'll get into that as we move along here. But as we inch closer to this game on Sunday nights, I can't help but to just try to evaluate the Steelers, right? That's all we're kind of left to do at this point. There hasn't been a regular season game yet. We saw what we saw in the preseason, but let's be honest, it's the preseason, so you can only take so much from it. So I have to sit and wonder right now, how do the Steelers stack up against the AFC and really the rest of the league? Are they really going to be a better team than the 9-6-1 team of last year? I mean, you go into every season, and the goal is to obviously win it all and to win a Super Bowl, and especially if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, and especially if you have Ben Roethlisberger as the quarterback. I mean, everybody knows.
Hello, you play to win the game.
Thank you, Herm. So let's go through the AFC here, and I'm going to go, let's walk through this. Let's do this exercise as we go through the AFC, and we'll start from the bottom up of the AFC standings from last year, and we'll see how the Steelers stack up against these teams. This is something I'll do at my house, or I'll do with my buddies whenever I'm talking about the season before it starts, and so I figured let's bring that here, and then we'll solicit your opinions on the text line at 412-928-9370 as just to where you think the Steelers land in this whole vortex. And so I go to the 4-12 teams from last year and the Jets and Raiders. And honestly, I won't spend a whole lot of time on the bottom dwellers of the conference. Obviously, these two teams with two big-time former Steelers on them. I think the Jets will be better than people expect. They might win 7 or 8 games if Sam Darnold progresses well. But obviously, they're going to be a non-factor at the end of the year. And I think the Raiders are just a ticking time bomb of drama. Not much happening there. Their receiver behind Antonio Brown is Tyrell Williams. And he was a third receiver for the Chargers the past 2 years. So ultimately, I think the Raiders will make a lot of noise. But I don't think they'll make a lot of noise as far as winning games. And so I think the Jets and Raiders don't have to worry about them making a big jump into this season. And you look at the 5-11 team from last year, that was Jacksonville. Nick Foles, he won't have the same weapons around him that he did in Philadelphia, and I worry about Leonard Fournette's health. He hasn't been healthy, really, for the past 2 seasons. But they're kind of a wild card team. I've seen a lot of preseason projections from national analysts that say that Jacksonville is ready to get back into the playoffs. They had success with Blake Bortles. So, really, anything is possible with Jacksonville. That defense is still elite, in my opinion. But in the end, I don't think that they are a playoff team. I don't think we have to worry about the Jaguars again in 2019. Then we go to the 6-10 teams from last year in the AFC. And that was Denver, Cincinnati, and Buffalo. So you start with Cincinnati. Obviously an AFC North Division opponent. I don't think they have a whole lot. They have a new coach coming in Zach Taylor. A.J. Green's out to begin the year. Their defense is dreadful, especially that secondary got torn to pieces last year, and I don't really think they made many improvements in that area. And they're in a competitive division. And so I think if you set the over-under at 6 wins again in 2019 for Cincinnati, which they got in 2018, I'd take the under on that. They'll probably finish worse than 6-10 this year. Buffalo just traded away LeSean McCoy. They're really young on offense. They're starting Devin Singletary now at running back. He was their third-round pick. And now a second-year guy and Josh Allen at quarterback. I do think they'll be a sneaky good team. They have a lot better defense than people give them credit for. but I think they're still a year away, at least from thinking about contending in the AFC. Denver's got a great defense, but Joe Flacco, I mean, there's a ceiling there. Guy had one great postseason. All right, around the 500 teams to make a run, or they could completely fall out, and the completely fall out part, that's the Miami Dolphins. They finished 7-9 last year. I think they're on a fire sale already. They might end up being the worst team in the conference. The Titans are always intriguing, Tennessee, but as long as they have Marcus Mariota there, I think it's similar to Joe Flacco in Denver. I think there's a really low ceiling, and I wouldn't be surprised to see another 9-7 year from Tennessee. Maybe they backdoor their way into the playoffs again, but ultimately, if the Steelers met them in the postseason, I don't think they'd be much of a factor. And so, in the standings right now, we get to right around where the Browns and the Ravens finished, and we'll get back to them. We'll first start with the 6-seed Colts from last year in the playoffs, and losing Andrew Luck, I think, knocks them out of the playoffs, but I do think they'll make some noise this year. I think they'll have a stretch in which they go 3-1, 4-1 under Jacoby Brissett just because they have a pretty complete roster. I mean, that offensive line might be the best in the league, and they still have some weapons. T.Y. Hilton, Marlon Mack, a nice back out of the backfield. I think they end up somewhere between 7-9 and 9-7 and probably likely to miss the playoffs. Still a tough team, not better than the Steelers. So then we go to the 5-seed. Where do the Steelers stack up? That was the Chargers last year. What does Melvin Gordon's absence mean for them? Can they really replace his production with a combination of Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson? Also, they lost their Pro Bowl rookie safety from last year, Derwin James. We can't overlook that. I was surprised at how good the Chargers were last year. The Steelers had a 17-point lead over them before blowing that game. I think they're about even with the Steelers. I think this is right where the Steelers land, is about the 5-seed in the AFC, and it's on them to kind of, once they get into that position, to be able to win games, because I think those games are very evenly matched whenever we get into that AFC playoff picture. And for the 3-seed Titans, they made some changes this year. Laremy Tunsil in, Kenny Stills in, and they got rid of Jadeveon Clowney. I think they'll probably win the AFC South, make it to the playoffs, but much like the Browns, they're a prove-it team. They haven't done it in the playoffs, and so I'm taking the Steelers over the Texans if they meet in the postseason. And so that brings us back to Cleveland and Baltimore and this whole thing. And Cleveland is such an interesting case because they might be every bit as talented as the Steelers, but they're also, one, very noisy, two, have a rookie head coach, and I think the minute they lose multiple games in a row or they deal with adversity like injuries or maybe some mistakes made, I think they'll probably crumble under that pressure. They keep saying that they won't, but I think when they start to feel the heat, it'll be very difficult for them to stay together with all of those personalities. I do think they sneak into the playoffs. I don't think they win the division, and I do think the Steelers are ultimately going to be a better team. And as far as the Ravens, I think they're even more of a wild card. They're a new-look team. What does a full season of Lamar Jackson look like? They have Mark Ingram at the running back position. They have some new receivers. Earl Thomas is in on defense. Honestly, the Ravens, this thing could either implode and they could win 5 games this year and Lamar Jackson could get hurt and he could be terrible, or they could win 10 games and win this division. I really think that it's that wide of a range for Baltimore. And so, as I said, that the Steelers probably, in my eyes, fall in the middle of the pack of the playoffs in the AFC, I think there is a huge problem when you look at the very top. The 1 and 2 seeds that are likely to finish that way in the AFC and the Chiefs and the Patriots. Normally, in years past, it was just the Patriots. Now, with their 8 straight AFC titles, they were the big scary monsters in the way of another Super Bowl for the Steelers. Now, it's a two-headed monster. You cannot ignore the offensive juggernaut that the Chiefs are. They have the best quarterback in the league. They're probably the best overall player in the league right now, Pat Mahomes. They just got LeSean McCoy. If that defense improves even just a little bit, I think they make it to the AFC title game with ease, and they can beat the Patriots and get to that Super Bowl. And so I think the Steelers have two huge, huge mountains to climb in the Chiefs and the Patriots. Whenever we look at them and we evaluate the AFC before this season starts, they're somewhere in the middle. I think they'll get to the playoffs. They're a playoff caliber team, but the Chiefs and Patriots are going to be really, really tough to beat. And I think that's where the Steelers land as we continue to preview this season and look at the AFC and the NFL as a whole and where the Steelers land in all of this. It's the start of a new day, and it's brought to you by Greenbrier Treatment Center. Coming up next, we'll wrap up some of the action from last night. And the Pirates, they were in a doozy. You're going to want to hear this. It's the Early Morning Show on 93.7 The Fan. All right, let's round up what happened last night in a segment we're going to call While Yins Were Sleeping.
Time now for While Yins Was Sleeping on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
Wait a second. Did that say While Yins Was Sleeping? I didn't even notice that. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Might probably more appropriate. So, if, and it's a big if, you were watching the Pirates take on the Marlins last night, you may have gone to bed thinking that the Bucs had it wrapped up against the league's worst team. It was 3-3 into the eighth. Bases loaded, two outs for Josh Bell, and a pass ball allows Jason Martin to score from third. Okay? So it's 4-3 Pirates into the ninth. One of the league's best closers on versus one of the worst offensive teams in the league. He cruises through the first two outs of the inning. The Marlins are down to their final strike. Okay, it's all set up. People are on their feet. They're ready to celebrate a victory. And some dude named Miguel Rojas does this.
The pitch. Fly ball center field. Marte back to the track looking up. It's gone. A line drive home run for Miguel Rojas. On a 2-1 pitch, ties the game in the top of the ninth off Felipe Vasquez.
So Felipe Vasquez gives up the lead. It's 4-4. We go into the bottom of the ninth. The Pirates have runners on first and second with two outs. Adam Frazier grounds one to short. Okay, the shortstop plays playing deeper, and so he has to charge it and make a quick throw. The throw is late. Frazier is safe at first on the throw, but inexplicably, Pablo Reyes rounds third, and I guess he gets the green light from Joey Cora at third base to go home, and he gets thrown out by a mile at the plate for the third out of the ninth inning. Clint Hurdle after the game.
We're trying to steal a run. It's an outfielder playing first. So, yeah, I mean, after he's out, you want to see him help. But if we score a run, we're all jumping up and down. And I mean, that's the life of a third base coach. It's a split second to make that decision, and he's making that decision while the throw's in the air.
So let's be clear about this. Pablo Reyes was on second base. This was a ground ball to the shortstop, and Joey Cora sent him home, had him round third, and go to home on a ground ball to short to end the inning. Let that sink in. So we move on. Top of the 10th, Parker Markle comes on the mound, and some other dude named Garrett Cooper homers.
It hit the pitcher's wrist. There's a fly ball deep to left center field. Back is Reynolds at the wall, and it is gone, way gone, into the back bullpen. Garrett Cooper, his 13th home run, gives the Marlins a 5-4 lead in the 10th.
So that's how it basically ended. They didn't do much in the bottom of the 10th. Pirates lose 5-4, and so if you were sleeping last night, you missed that debacle. Also, Jared Goff, a four-year extension worth $134 million to the Rams. That's 110 guaranteed. That's an NFL record. And they'll keep him a Ram for the next 6 years. And so you have to wonder, is he going to win a Super Bowl there in the next 6 years? He's definitely got a chance to. That team is geared up and ready to go under Sean McVay. And so that's all what happened last night. In case you went to bed a little bit early, coming up next, as I mentioned to open the show, Mike Tomlin had his first press conference of the season, and he was great. And so we're going to go through some of those things, some of the Mike Tomlin moments from yesterday. That's coming up next here. It's the Early Morning Show on 93.7 The Fan. So I don't know if we'll do this every time Mike Tomlin has a press conference, because he seemed like he was in rare form yesterday. And welcome back to the Early Morning Show. We're on until 5:40 to bring you up to the Fan Morning Show pre-show. But Mike Tomlin was great yesterday, and we're going to bring you some Mike Tomlin moments. And so maybe some inspirational stuff, maybe some insightful things, maybe some hilarious things, maybe just some interesting things and some cliches. Because as we all know, Mike Tomlin has been known to use a few cliches every once in a while. And so let's go through the Mike Tomlin moments from yesterday, the things that stuck out to me. The first was, it was an insightful thing. I thought he mentioned to open the thing up that they can't give up too much early on in the game against the Patriots.
We can't warm up to the competition like the way that we did a year ago. We gave up a big play on the first possession of the game, spotted those guys 7 points, and then we settled in and played better, particularly in their environment.
Yeah, I'm really happy that he mentioned this to start it off because I completely agree. We always hear about how the first 10 to 15 plays are scripted out. And if anybody's going to script out plays well and be ultra prepared for a game coming in, it's Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, and they've been looking to this game for a long time. It's the first one on the schedule, and so I think that was really important for Mike T to point out to start off things. And then things got a little bit crazy. He mentioned some headset communication.
I'm not overly concerned about that. We have technicians in the league, also has technicians on site. That's their area of expertise. I'm going to worry about preparing and coaching the football team.
So just for some more perspective on this, this was the first question of the press conference. Right off the bat, Collins' boy, Jake Klinger, goes right at him with this question about the headsets and how, you know, there was some miscommunication in the past. We all know the story of how Tomlin said that he was getting the Patriots radio broadcast in his headset in New England. I didn't think Tomlin completely dismissed the question there. I thought he could have been a lot harder on Jay Klinger whenever he asked that and just completely said, I'm not talking about that. But he gave a good 10-second answer there, which was more than I thought he'd give. And so then we get into some of the good stuff. Mike, do the Patriots change year to year?
I think they change relative to the weapons at his disposal. And they work to highlight the talents of those that he is working with. So, you know, if you have red paint your barn red.
First big line of the year from Mike T right there. Pulled it right out of the hat with ease. No pause, no extra thinking. Just fired away with this one. That was well done by Mike Tomlin. He's in midseason form already. All right, how about some hard news stuff? What about Sean Davis?
I don't know. We'll see. In terms of Sean Davis's availability, I like what I've seen from Cam Kelly. He's had a good preseason and got a great deal of confidence in him.
This could be a big, big story if Sean Davis is out. I saw a headline nationally. It's making national news that Cam Kelly might start this game for the Steelers. And, of course, they frame it in the worst possible way and say, former AAF star might start at safety against the Patriots, against Tom Brady and the Patriots. And you look at it that way, it's like, yeesh. But Cam Kelly has impressed in the preseason, and he's gained the favor of Mike Tomlin. So I certainly hope that he's up to the task if Sean Davis is out. I do worry about that moving forward. All right, how about some Javon Hargrave talk? And Mike Tomlin with another great line here.
I like how he continues to add to his portfolio. I often kid him, you know, a nose guard is like Blockbuster Video. He better diversify. You know, nose doesn't get an opportunity to play much. So he better reinvent himself as a sub-package rusher. And he has done that over the last couple of years.
Man, this one's right up there with the paint the barn red comment. But I think Tomlin definitely has a point here. I thought Hargrave, he really took a step back last year. There were times where he would just completely disappear. You wouldn't, I mean, it's impossible to miss him as far as seeing him on the actual field. But as far as actually making plays, I thought there were games in which you didn't hear his name called at all. And he needs to make a more consistent impact. And I think his point about the nose in the NFL right now is valid. And he used that Blockbuster kind of analogy there where you've got to be able to adapt and do more for this defense. And I think that he was spot on, and I didn't expect him to make such a great cultural reference there. And as the press conference moved on, he always has some really interesting interactions, I guess we'll say, with Aditi Kinkabwala from NFL Network. She always seems to get like some very pointed answers from him. I don't know if it's the way that she asks her questions, but and if you go back and watch the press conference, and she sets up her questions very well, and they're always very good questions. But Mike Tomlin always just kind of gives her a stare as he is listening to her every word. And she asked about the dynamics of Ben Roethlisberger's receivers this year. And, you know, you could tell that she was getting at Now that Antonio Brown is gone and he's not demanding the ball all the time, has Ben relieved about it? And Mike Tomlin thought about it for a little bit, and then he said this.
I haven't been around a good receiver that doesn't want the ball. You know, I'm sure Juju Smith-Schuster wants the ball. I haven't been around a top-flight wideout that doesn't want the ball. So, you know, forget what they said. Give him time.
Yeah, he had to come back and say, give him time there, because Aditi followed up with another question of maybe it's less vocal than last year, you know, without number 84 there. And Mike Tomlin said, give him time. I thought this was sneakily probably the most interesting comment of the press conference, because I don't know if that's a good thing. I mean, is that a healthy thing after what all has transpired with Antonio Brown, that he expects Juju Smith-Schuster to demand the ball more and to be more vocal and to go back and forth with Ben a little bit more, and now that he's the number one guy? I know it was kind of an innocent comment, and I don't think Juju is nearly as crazy and won't be as destructive as Antonio Brown, but that's something to kind of look out for, that Mike Tomlin expects that kind of dynamic moving forward. All right, as we go along here with some Mike Tomlin moments from yesterday, our good friend Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette, who will join the Fan Morning Show at 8 o'clock today, asked about the run-pass ratio.
You know, I'm not really kind of into all of those things. I'm into winning games and doing what it was required to win a game this week. And so I'm not painting with that broader brush. We'll do what we need to do this week in terms of run-pass ratios and things to get out of the stadium.
Boom, bang, bingo. First paint with a broad brush of the year. That's pretty much the only reason why I played that answer. Not that that was a bad question. Also, he talked about Terrell Edmonds, and he's getting a second game against Tom Brady. Here's Mike Tomlin's thoughts on that.
I'm sure. You know, he's been in the stadium with them before. He stood back on his half field and made eye contact with 12 and understands what that means in terms of some of the line of scrimmage play and other things. So I'm sure it'll be useful to him, but I'm sure he'll have that experience in a lot of circumstances this year as a second-year player. Hey, I've been here before. You know, and I think that's why it's reasonable for people in my position to expect an increased quality of play in all of those guys.
First of all, I want to go back to like the first 5 seconds of this. Whenever Mike Tomlin, sometimes when he wants to stress something, he says his words in a different way and he puts emphasis on it. And you heard that in the first part of this.
I'm sure. You know, he's been in the stadium with them before.
With them before. He wants you to know that Terrell Edmonds has been there before. And I thought those were some interesting thoughts on Edmonds. And a lot of people are expecting him to make a big jump this year. I certainly hope he does. It's going to be something to monitor. All right, let's finish up here as we are getting toward the end of some Mike Tomlin moments from yesterday. How about this? Big Boss believer.
He was really consistent throughout the process. He essentially answered all the challenges that we presented to him. And we, in this room, talked openly about some of the challenges that we created for him in practice and in stadium, situationally and so forth. He was really consistent.
In my mind, he's just too good of a kicker not to bounce back this year. Colin and Chris, they're going to owe me $200 in Giant Eagle gift cards if he has an above a 90% field goal percentage this year. I think it's happening. I'm a Boz believer. I'm on it. There's no doubt for me. All right, let's get to maybe a new Tomlinism. I don't know if I've heard this one before.
Cooks like to be in the kitchen. You know what I mean? These guys are competitors, man. That's a competitor's environment up there. So I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah, that was an answer to, you know, the players say they love playing in New England. And Tomlin pulled that one out, the cooks in the kitchen. I think we're going to have to monitor that to see if he goes back to it throughout the year. All right, we're going to finish up now. By the way, I counted 5 division of labors yesterday, and I think he might have had more about being in the stadium as well. Those are probably the top two if we're going to count some Tomlinisms from yesterday. But we're going to wrap up with the question of the day, and I told you this is going to be something that you can ponder, you can chew on throughout the morning and throughout your day, maybe get the conversation started at work with this question, and it's going to go back to Devin Bush. And Mike Tomlin also, in this press conference, mentioned something about Devin Bush and playing the young guys. Let's hear his answer.
We got some young guys that have a chance to play significant roles for us, but we also understand it is their first time in the stadium. So we got to manage some of that, some of the Devin Bushes of the world and guys like that.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a comment that's going to be replayed over and over again today, and already was yesterday. Mike Tomlin seemed like he is holding Devin Bush back, and I think this could be a great, great mistake, especially if he simply takes him off the field just because it's his first time in the NFL stadium, as Tomlin would say. I mean, if he's getting behind and he looks a little bit lost out there and some plays are getting behind him, sure, I mean, yank him. But if he's thriving, if he's running around, if he's doing his thing, if he's showing off his speed and getting to guys, getting to the ball carrier, I think it's silly to put some kind of reins on Devin Bush for this game. And so the question of the day is Mike Tomlin using the wrong approach with Devin Bush on Sunday? Does he already have the wrong mindset with his first-round pick and not fully unleashing him against the Patriots for Sunday? If you missed any of the show today, we do not have the podcast live quite yet. That should be here by at least the end of the week, hopefully by later on today, but not so yet. So we're going to hold off on that for right now. But I appreciate you listening this morning. Colin Dunlap, Chris Mack, Jim Colony, The Fan Morning Show, they're all on the way. They're featuring Post-Gazette Steelers writer Ray Fittipaldo at 8 and Pirates insider Jason Mackey at 9. The pre-show on the way next here on 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.